T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It is a pleasure. Anytime I speak with this guy, it is a pleasure. The award-winning columnist from the New York Post, Mike Vaccaro. Vac, as we call him. And Vac, how are we doing this afternoon?
Twitter, this is kind of like being asked to sit in with the band at the Simon and Garfunkel concert at Central Park. I'm very excited. It's good to be here with you guys.
Good call, Vac. How you doing, man?
I'm great, Dave. How are you?
Doing very well, thank you. Nice to be back with you guys.
Always good to hear your voice there, Vac. We were just watching the Tanaka video, which I'm sure you've seen as well, too. That's just brutal. My God, that's and you know, it's weird because I know that teams want to get into live BP and everything, you know, as soon as you can and get this thing going. But, boy, you know, no net in front of the mound. Hopefully that's going to be okay. That's tough. Tough to watch.
That's something that's going to be second guess for a while. But I mean, I've seen that everywhere else too. It seems like
right.
That's the, yep. You know, we're overusing the word protocol a lot, but it seems like that's the protocol teams are using, is to try and kind of jump in with 2 feet as quickly as possible. I mean, I guess I understand because, I mean, pitchers don't generally like to, right. to have that screen in front of them if they're trying to work on things. But I'm going to venture to guess they don't like being hit in the melon by 140 mile per hour line drives either. So that's scary. It's scary.
And you know darn well, we just had Scott Service on from here at Seattle, and I'm sure the whole baseball world has seen that video, or the PR guys have seen it and passed it along. Hey, boys, just for today, maybe let's put that screen up, you know?
Yeah,
the statute of limitations for today has already run out. Let's get things
going. It's almost like, I mean, you know, we're already dancing this dance, you know, to try and get to opening day and then try to get through to the end of the year and then try to get through to October. And we're dancing that dance every day anyway with the pandemic. And then you add a degree of difficulty a little bit with this, and it kind of makes it seem even more arduous, you know? Unbelievable.
Yeah. We're going to have Mark Gubas on later from the Angels broadcast team and talk about Trout and his thoughts. Give us your thoughts, Mike, on sports trying to come back in the midst of this thing, because it's energizing on one hand that, you know, there's enough, looks like if you do the right things, we can do it, but yet at the same time, man, it's daunting is
absolutely the right word, Dave. I mean, you know, it's look, I think we all would love to have sports back, and we all are hoping and crossing our fingers that you know, the NBA, the NHL, and of course Major League Baseball figure out a way to get back on the field and actually get on the court, get on the ice, and get it done. But I think we all understand that there's just so many. It's kind of like an obstacle course, the old obstacle course from the mm-hmm. superstars. You know, I mean, there's just so many. There's just so many things in your way, and you know, hopefully you can clear these things. But look, I mean, you know, the best player in the sport is saying that he's not sure he can play, and that's a huge story. And you know, in almost any other context, you'd be, you know, there'd be a way to figure out who to be outraged about that. And yet I can't think that anybody with a heart is even remotely surprised that a guy who's, you know, about to become a father for the first time would have these thoughts, you know, these worries about his family and about his own health and about wanting to see his child, especially in a season that's going to be compromised because of the sheer nature of it. So it's, you know, it's every day is a learning experience, thank guys. I mean, you know, we understand that nothing about this stuff is normal. Really, nothing about our world is normal.
Correct.
Every day, we're kind of reminded of just another couple of things that we're going to have to get used to. You know, whether it's a man on second in the 10th inning, or a player, or players opting out, or anything else. You know, wearing a mask. I mean, you know, everything about this is different, and we're going to have to adjust to it. I think we've learned that much over the last couple of months. It's all about adapting and trying to figure out how to make it work.
Mike Vaccaro of the Post, our guest here on The Fan this afternoon. Ed Coleman, Dave Sims back together today. The just reading, you know, to your point, Vac, reading last night about, I think it was 1.2% of all of baseball, basically, you know, testing positive. And a lot of it asymptomatic, you know, some a little bit more serious. But, you know, and those numbers are good. And then you get, you know, you get into day two and you hear the news about Freddie Freeman, who's the face of the franchise, the Atlanta Braves. And it's going to be a while, obviously. And you know, Freddie tested okay at first, but then, you know, started showing symptoms. So apparently he is a lot sicker than you would like to believe. And you see these things crop up like this, and you wonder whether you can even get through or get to the point where you can start this season, you know?
It's sobering. And the thing that I start, you know, wondering about is, you know, what exactly is the number that we're so okay to consider it collateral damage? Is it 5%? 10%?
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, and that, you know, baseball is certainly one issue. I mean, you wonder really what it's going to be like with college football.
I was about to ask about that. Yeah,
you know, there's massive outbreaks, and you wonder what number people are going to be able to live with before people finally say enough. We can't do this. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what that number is, honestly. You know, I mean, I think there was a time probably in March when this first happened that if you said that 1.2% of baseball players tested positive, he's like, well, we got to shut the sport down immediately. And there's not even a question about that because we haven't really determined what's considered to be an outrageously high number, which is very strange. And I get it. Look, I mean, I get it. Like you said, most are asymptomatic. Most of them are young and healthy and strong. So they have the best possible, you know, facilities to be able to combat this disease. But I guess here's my question to anybody. It's like, you know, if you had the opportunity to have COVID or not have it, I think everybody would probably answer, I'd rather not have it.
Yes.
So
sure.
You can't just dismiss it as, hey, well, he's asymptomatic, or well, he's young, or well, he's, you know, he's got, it's not going to really, you know, cause any kind of immediate health concerns. Well, okay, that's great, but I'd still rather not have it, given the choice.
Yeah, you know, and as we look forward to what baseball's trying to do, as I mentioned to Eddie earlier, I heard from a guy who says, you know, let's hope we can just get to July 23rd, let alone get it and get to the middle of the season, get to the end of the season. Boy, football, the very nature of football. Man, I tell you what, for my money, I think that's a long odds that they're going to be able to have any kind of normalcy.
Yeah, it's hard to see because it's just, right, because of the nature of the game. Look, I mean, there is no such thing as social distancing in football. It's whatever the opposite of social distancing is the way, you know, the way you play the game, unless you're talking about a receiver with breakaway speed. But I mean, you know, joking aside, I mean, there is no way to avoid contact with people. So, you know, that spread is going to be amazing. And here's the thing that the question that I have is, you know, say they try and play in the NFL and say, you know, say that the virus goes around the offensive line room in, you know, for the Jets 1 week.
Yeah.
So you're going to tell me you're going to want to protect your franchise quarterback with five guys off the street, you know, which is what you're probably going to have to do if you lose 5, 6, 10, 12 guys to a COVID stretch. I mean, it's just, I mean, these are the things. You know, you may not think about it right away, but these are things that are going to become realities at some point for some team, I'm sure of it.
Yeah, and listen, you know, you look at the NBA too, Vac, and, you know, I'm sure there are some coaches in the NBA who believe some of their players are social distancing when they play defense just normally, okay? But at the same time, you know, that's basically a contact sport. Plus, you have baseball, you know, they're, you know, NBA and NHL are going to be in bubbles. Whether that works or not, we're going to find out. But baseball is going to travel, too. And I think that adds to the problems as well. I think there are enough problems to begin with. And you don't see a smooth landscape, I don't, for any sport to get through this, which is, you know, the toughest thing of all, I think.
No, there's no such thing as a smooth landscape at all, Ed. And look, I mean, I think, like I said, I mean, I think it's, you know, what are we going to be able to live with as a society? What are we going to be able to live with a clear conscience, you know, asking these guys to go out and, you know, and compete for our, you know, for our pleasure, and you know, knowing that virus is out there, and knowing that it's easily contractible if you don't do everything exactly the right way. You know, we all live that way. I mean, I know that all of us have certainly avoided certain situations when we've been able to, professionally, whatever, the last 3.5 months, because we didn't want to put ourselves in a dangerous position. So, you know, you can certainly understand why there would be concerns for all those athletes. I mean, even if there is a bubble, I mean, you know, I'm not sure how much I believe that the bubble is going to be a total panacea. I don't think the NBA believes that either, but it's just, you know, and I'm also interested in what's going to happen once these guys get there and realize, oh my God, I'm in the bubble for 3 months. I mean, that's another, you know, side interest, I think, that, you know, what, What are those guys going to be able to live with? It's just, I mean, every day it's going to be a whole different set of stories.
Yeah, I hear you on that. When I was in New York, I just got here to Seattle on Monday, but there was a stretch once I got back from spring training on, was it March 13th, and the first 5 days I went out for a walk 3 times. Then I stayed inside for 44 consecutive days.
Yeah.
You know, I was counting.
Yeah.
So now you're asking these young, you know, healthy NBA, NHL players, you know, to not only stay inside and you're going to trust that there's some maturity level there that they're going to be able to behave themselves and not try to,
right,
you know, import some people from outside the bubble. You know, guys are guys.
Yep.
So that's a concern for me, man. If I were an owner, I'd be, oh, you can't hire enough security.
Right. And at what point does even that become a little bit too much? Because, I mean, yeah,
sure.
you do want to believe that, you know, there are certain, you know, there are certain ways, that, you know, certain trust values that you have between players, owners, and, you know, you think the players are hopefully having it between each other, not wanting to, you know, put each other in a bad way either. So.
Let me ask you this. What did you think? Was it the Oklahoma coach, the football coach said, I think it was he, that said, let's move college football to the spring? You think there's any chance of that happening?
I think there's definitely a chance. I think that that's the last resort for college football because it's just such a cash cow. And you know, one thing I do know is that they're going to have a season at some point, somehow, if they can, just because of all the money that's involved. So if that means the only way they can have a season with any kind of, you know, reasonable conclusion is to have it in the spring, I think they'll do that. You know, the problem, of course, is that, you know, now you're competing with college basketball and college baseball. But, of course, you know, again, like we said, I mean, that, you know, in most years that would be a huge deal to have to deal with. But, you know, this year, I mean, you know, you kind of do what you can. And I think that if it came down to that, schools would have no choice but to try and figure out how to do that. I actually think it makes the most sense because I do think but you know, I say that, but there's no guarantee that in January, when they were February, when they were started up,
precisely,
that they, you know, it'd be any better. We just don't know. And I think that's the bottom line frustration, guys, is that, you know, we can say, well, in a couple months, in a couple, you know, we just don't know. We have no idea. When the experts don't have any real conclusion or any real idea, then you know that it's going to be hard for the rest of us. And so that makes it really hard. I mean, it's just difficult to kind of figure out, well, maybe we can do it by this, or maybe we can do it by then. And that's why even it all seems so arbitrary, because we just don't know. I'd love to see this baseball season concluded, just because I think it would be a triumph for the sport. But there's so many things that lie in the way between now and when the commissioner hands out his, that trophy sometime in October. There's just so many things. If you think about it too much, it almost becomes overwhelming.
Yeah.
I think with the, you know, with college football too, there's probably more urgency as well, Vac, because of missing out on the money they did during the NCAA tournament with a lot of big schools. Obviously, that's their lifeline. I think
yes.
We know that. You know,
drives the bus.
Like it or not, that's the way it is. And you know, switching to another time might do it. But listen, wasn't it a couple of months ago people were saying, well, you know, when the warm weather comes, this virus will slow down. Well, I don't, and we don't even know what's going to happen come fall when the flu season combines with this thing. But it certainly doesn't look promising the way things are escalating at this point. You know,
and that's the thing that's frustrating, guys, is that there's just no way to predict. You know,
right?
Yes, right. We not only thought that we thought hot weather was going to be the panacea for it, and yet, you know, obviously there's been spikes in the summertime, there's been spikes in warm weather states. jives with what we saw. Now, you know, obviously there were other underlying reasons why the things might have spiked, but I mean, look, I mean, it's obvious that that's not going to be the reason why it goes away, is because it just happens to wander in the hot weather. So we have to kind of go on to another theory or another postulate, and you know, that's when it really gets frustrating, because like I said, I mean, even the people that we turn to let us know, you know, what's going to happen now, they don't know what's going to happen now.
Yeah, Mike Vaccaro,
it's like kind of when somebody asked me for a baseball prediction. I mean, I give it to them, but I mean, I want it.
I try to call off the jam, you know, Memory Old and Roller Derby.
Yeah,
put your hands out.
Yeah.
No, that's not going to happen.
Exactly,
Mike Vaccaro joining us from the New York Post. Mike, I talked to friends around the country who do sports talk radio and how their life has been affected by everything that's going on. How the heck are you getting by or surviving? you know, writing a column with nothing, with no games going on. And certainly, I mean, I know you're not going to write anything about cornhole contest on ESPN or any of that kind of stuff. I mean, how's it been for you?
Yeah, it's been challenging, Dave. I mean, but you know, I've actually embraced the challenge because, look, especially for the first 3 months of this, when you know there wasn't even issues to write about. I mean, at least the last 6 weeks we've been able to write, you know, three columns a week about how the baseball owners and players hate each other. So at least that was something that was newsworthy. But for, you know, for the first 3 months, I mean, you really kind of had to figure out things that people might want to read. And you know, I think a lot of guys with that kind of job went one of two ways. They either wanted to write the virus, thinking that it might be the story of their career. And I think there were some outlets that allowed those guys to do it. In my case, I mean, I certainly didn't shy away from writing about the virus when it was important, but you know, I also thought that my whatever, for lack of a better word, the way I could make myself essential was to allow someone to read my column for 5 minutes a day, and that's 5 minutes a day when they don't have to worry about COVID and don't have to worry about anything right. else. And I feel like that's kind of the best way that I could contribute. So the thing that meant was, and look, I've been doing this a long time, so I'm lucky. I mean, I do have a pretty deep roster of people I can call up and stories that I know about and stories I've never had the opportunity, really the time to tell, you know, whether they're historically based, whether they're just, some of the stories I've written, they've just been products of the fact that, you know, I didn't have to cover three baseball games a week, you know, so I wouldn't have had the time, the opportunity, you know, to call up Magic Johnson as I did one time just to talk about the 40th anniversary of his first title and stuff like that. I mean, those kind of columns have allowed me to be able to, I think, reach people and give them an opportunity to still remember how much they enjoy sports. And, you know, for that 5 or 6 minutes when they were reading the column, they didn't have to worry about this stuff that was going on the front of the paper. You know, that you want to, you know, completely ignore that stuff. But I do think there's a value in terms of giving somebody an alternative to just, you know, kind of doom surfing 24 hours a day.
Well said, Vac. I'll give people a heads up too, because I've already read your latest column. Okay, that I guess will be in the papers for tomorrow. But you were talking about minor league ball because it struck a chord with me, Vac. You know, it's one thing that I guess I worry about with the game of baseball. No minor league season this year. You wrote about the minor leagues and obviously the condensing of the minor leagues to come. You know, I don't worry about the Louisvilles and the Oklahoma Cities and the Round Rocks and places like that, but I do worry about, you know, say the Hudson Valley Renegades or the smaller towns in the Midwest, because that's where you get, you know, the people who are going to fall in love with this game in future generations. And now, you know, those places are gone in a lot of cases. And that concerns me probably more about the game down the line.
I couldn't agree with that take more, Ed. We happen to be lucky. I mean, I was lucky. I was born in New York, so obviously my first contact with baseball was the Mets and the Yankees. But most people weren't. Most people's contact with baseball is hundreds of miles away from a major league team. And so the first time they're actually able to see a professional baseball player is maybe a Class A short season guy who's got no shot of making it to big leagues, but, you know, he's good enough to actually make a living playing baseball for a summer. And there are millions of people who came to baseball that way. And you're right, that's not going to be an option for a lot of these cities anymore. And it's so discouraging that seems to be the way baseball is headed. You know, what I wrote about in the column was, you know, it was a year when I got to cover, you know, two small short-season Class A teams. 1994, the Hudson Valley Renegades up in Fishkill, and the New Jersey Cardinals over in Augusta, New Jersey. It was just amazing. I mean, every day those games, the stadiums were packed, and they really, you know, the impact that these players had on their small communities, but you multiply that by all the other teams that are around in the country that, you know, have allowed people to really embrace baseball for the first time. And if that's going to fade away, I mean, that's going to be an irreplaceable part of baseball's soul. And I'm just not sure how you replenish that. I don't think you can do it. I don't think you can fake it. And I don't think you can make it up. And I think that's going to be a real problem. I really do.
Yeah, that's going to be difficult. And having read a lot about those towns, man, oh, man, so many jobs, not only with the ball club.
Yeah,
I mean, the players, but, you know, people exactly. work on the ball club and all the ancillary things.
Yep,
so,
ancillary. Yeah. Yep, no question about it. Hey, Vac, always good talking to you. Even better reading you. Hopefully we get through this season and maybe a couple of other sports seasons as well, and hopefully we keep chugging along. Got a lot to get through, but hopefully it all works out for the best anyhow. But it's
Guys, that's really how I'm rooting, so I'm looking forward to that also. And It's really been a lot of fun talking with you guys.
Enjoy it, Mike. Thanks so
Thanks,
much,
Mac. Appreciate it. Okay, talk to you soon. Mike Vaccaro, award-winning columnist for the New York Post.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.